taping. Okay, so broadcast. Will raise a lot of the familiar problems we've already been talking about. we'll talk about broadcast from the early inventions that led to the technology at the end of the 19th century to about the 1970s or 80s, at which point broadcast become, or 90s maybe, which point broadcast becomes very complicated in connection, obviously, with the internet and the web. We'll take up the subsequent fate of those forms of communication, those media in the world of the internet in probably in about two weeks, I think we'll do that. We'll have that discussion. For today, what I want to talk about is radio. And by radio here, we'll mean radio and television, just the technologies whereby images and sounds and other things can be transmitted over a distance through the air. Wireless would probably be the best word for it. Talk about it as we have about the computer and the photography and so on, as a technology, as an application, as a medium, and the ways in which those all interact. Say something about the early technological development of radio, where all these questions about invention, who invented something, what it means to have invented something, arise. then talk about what really happens around 1920 when radio comes of age. Radio is not seen as a broadcast technology until around then, or it doesn't, isn't enriched as a broadcast technology till around then. So we'll talk about that. We'll discuss the assignments. Alan S., are you here? Alan S. is not here. Hannah C., here you are. Sydney D., you are here. Charmaine C. and Alexandra C. Okay, so 4 out of 5 isn't bad. So we'll talk about the assignments. Radio or broadcast, whatever we're going to call radio, let's say, is one of these technologies that we talked about, whereby communication is accomplished by, so to speak, extending, establishing a remote presence, rather than creating a representation of a certain particular context. Transmitting that that representation either through space or over time somewhere else, that so it can be decoded and interpreted and somebody can recover what happened the way you do when you, say, write a letter. You're making a representation, you're creating a representation of the context that enables somebody to, as it were, be present at the original context. That's what happens with a photograph, so to speak. I draw a picture of you, I'm creating a representation I then can pass along, and somebody can decode the conventions of artistic representation to find out what you look like. I take a picture of you, and it's as if you're standing in front of me. Now, as we saw last time, that's much more complex and problematic than people make it out to be, but that nonetheless is a useful distinction. Photography, telephony, telephones, voice recording, I'll say a word about in a second, cinema, radio, television, and their descendants in the world of the internet all involve this second manner of communication. One technology we won't talk about very much at all is voice recording, but it was interesting in the 19th century in particular. After photography, people said if we can make a record of what somebody looks like, why can't we make a record of what they sound like. Experiments in voice recording began around the 1860s. We think of Thomas Edison, as having, so to speak, invented this, but there were earlier, as always, earlier efforts to do that, some of with varying degrees of success. And in fact, Edison went around 1890, when the wax cylinder technology he had invented became diffused. And he made audio recordings of all of these great poets and writers. This is, I think this will work. No, it isn't. No, this was going to be Tennyson reciting the charge of the Light Brigade, the poem that Paul, we have to continue to rely on Paul to do it, since that audio didn't survive. Simply the tin can telephone was in a sense an example of an early telephony, sometimes called the lover's telephone, because people would sneak to their lover's window and run a string or something like that and have a conversation. Radio, like photography, can be, if you think of it just as a technique, as a means of transmitting certain signals through the air or through space, it's used for any number of different things. It's used for to control drones. It's used to open your garage door. It's used to figure out where you are on your nav navigation system. It's used to set off remote bombs. It's used to control. It can be used to control. I actually have it for my TV. You have a radio control rather than a UV control. But it's used for any number of things. And of course, you all have radio transmitters in your house or dorm or wherever you live that enable you to take your laptop to bed with you, so to speak. We will be interested in particular in the uses of radio we associate with today with broadcasting. And the subsequent uses of similar technologies to broadcast pictures. That'll be the focus. And we'll be focused in general on the informational uses of that rather than the entertainment uses. Now that won't be general. I'll at various points step out of that to talk about entertainment uses. But we're interested in the history of information, so we want to look at things like news and public information and how this technology worked in that area. As before, and you've seen this diagram before, and you'll see it again at least twice, maybe once at least in connection with the internet. Or you
it'll come up.
It'll come up again. But again, it's the same picture. We can think about inventions or innovations or technical achievements that taken together contribute to what suddenly gels and seems to be a technology. And that's a public perception. It's not as if the technology is, the fact of it being a technology is inherent in the thing itself. In this case, we'll talk a little about Tesla and Marconi and Fressenden and so on, and the subsequent inventions. Those become this technology of radio or tele-TV or maybe wireless, again, is the best term for it. It in turn has various applications, point-to-point transmission, as for example, ship-to-shore communications, or ship-to-ship communications, which are, for many people, the central function of this technology until around 1920. Broadcast, which then can be then expands into various implementations like broadcast radio, advisories, shortwave, and so on, remote control, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And again, we're going to look at this, particularly at this at the broadcast uses of radio, and that in turn devolves into genres like AM, FM, music, public information, talk, sports. And so on, the familiar genre. So this is that picture of the relation between inventions, technologies, applications, implementations, genres. And that usage is not standardized, and you're going to change it from one technology to the next, but the general picture is always going to work out that way, particularly in these modern, complex technologies. Moreover, the form of any one application is going to be determined not simply by the potential of the technology, the capacities of the technology, but by other factors. And this is very clearly true in radio, as it will be in the internet, by the role of government, by the technology itself, by commercial and corporate interests, by public opinion and public interests. And also, I want to stress this, by the alternative media that are available. Media don't acquire their functions in isolation. They're always in competition with other media, which will determine the way in which each of them is used. For example, if we look at the various competitions in which radio has engaged, we'll see. I'll mention this in a moment, that it's been in competition with a telephone, with a newspaper, with a phonograph player, later with television. Television's in competition with film. And this is constantly, and of course now, we see this happening with a vengeance in the internet, where the whole question is, are you going to get this one way, are you going to download, are you going to stream, are you going to buy a CD, and so on. That kind of question is always prevalent, but it was prevalent in this period as well. For example, just to step back for a moment, photography in certain ways displaced graphic depiction. I don't know why this again came out so small, this image. But that's a photograph of the Boer War, a nasty war that Britain fought between 1899-1902 with the Afrikaner settlers in South Africa. Particularly the British in that war invented the concentration camp, which they gave to the world. These are two pictures. This is a drawing. I'm afraid you can't. I don't know why it came out so small, but it's a painting of troops advancing, British troops advancing very heroically, and there's a photograph. Both of those kinds of representations were used at the time in different contexts to give people a sense of what was going on. Similarly, the photographs made by the muckrakers, like Jacob Riis, about whom we talked, who did that book, How the Other Half Lives, about the life in the poor in the slums of New York. A lot of his photographs were published again as lithographs. So here's a photograph that Riis did on the left, a lithograph on the right, and clearly something's lost when you move it to a lithograph. Although we know that photographs can be manipulated and so on and so forth, the reality of the photograph is more compelling than the reality of the lithograph made from it. An interesting area of, so to speak, competition for photography and graphic depiction is in book illustrations. Photographic illustrations were used in, let's say, grown-up books in the great deal in the late 19th century. In fact, there are novels of Henry James, like The Golden Bowl, that contain photographic illustrations. None with people, I think, but some with places and so on. It's something we don't think now of buying a novel by Ian McEwan or whoever you like and opening it to find photographic illustrations. In fact, we don't really think of finding illustrations in grown-up books at all. That's for kids. Other than graphic novels, which is another story. But illustrations are used in both children's and adult literature in the 19th century. That's one of the illustrations from Thackeray's Vanity Fair. Dickens' works famously were all illustrated, all by Phiz, right? All by all but the first, I think, by Phiz. Is that right?
Yeah, I think Pickwick Papers was called.
Yeah, but famously illustrated, and those illustrations. nowadays, in our tradition, the Anglo-American tradition, we don't think of photographic illustrations being used in books. In other traditions, it is. We have Gabrielle, is Gabrielle here? Yeah. So do you read fotonovelas? You can whisper.
No, we would watch novelas rather than read.
Yeah. But they're a popular form in Latin America and even Spanish. Language culture, these comic books, so to speak, with photographs. In Italy, they used to be. In fact, Sophia Loren began her career as a character in the fotonovelas in Italy. That we don't use that is more a cultural fact than one that has to do with the nature of the medium. Similarly, and one other example, I wanted to spend too much time on this, the dictionaries use line drawings, by and large, to illustrate things. When the American Heritage Dictionary first came out in 1969, they used photographs. People said, that's not right. Photograph can only be a photograph of a particular canoe or a particular a pair of espadrilles, but you can, a drawing can be of the abstract espadrille. Now that again is a cultural assumption, why the drawing should be abstract and the picture should be specific. But nonetheless, dictionaries apart from the American Heritage don't do that. We'll come in as we talk to other examples of these competitions and how they're resolved both culturally and technologically. Radio, like the other technologies we've talked about, is the product of a number of technical and scientific innovations. The discovery of electromagnetic waves by James Maxwell, the demonstration that one could transmit and receive electromagnetic waves by Heinrich Hertz, who's known to you probably only for the unit of measure that he stands for. Guglielmo Marconi, Italo Scott's, for Paul's benefit, I'll say, inventor. His mother was a Scottish or Irish, I think, but she was Scottish and Irish, but her family were the owners of Jameson's Irish Whiskey, which gave him a considerable cushion to work on when he was trying to develop the technology, and lots of connections in the UK where there was much more interest in this than in Italy. And he discovered that he demonstrated you could send radio signals over a mile using a coherer, which is sort of the ancestor of the vacuum tube, is the best way to say it. Jagadish Chandra Bose, an Indian scientist at the University of Calcutta. He went to Cambridge, went back, taught at the University of Calcutta, was interested in the biology of plants, a lot of different topics. But he demonstrated, among other things, that it was possible to use radio waves to set off an explosion at a distance. Wasn't particularly interested in the use of radio for communication. But he wrote about what he called, do we have Hindi speakers here? Or Gujarati speakers here? No? The phrase is translated as invisible light, the phrase he used for radio waves, and he wrote about it. This is in Hindi, I think, or Bengali, I'm not sure. The invisible light can easily pass through bricks, walls, buildings, etc. Therefore, messages can be transmitted by it without the means of wires. He didn't do anything in that area, but made that observation. Tesla, a Serbian-born American scientist, demonstrates that you can send radio waves a considerable distance. He's also known just because you see his name on the backs of cars driving around the more posh sections of Berkeley. By 1906, new technologies are emerging that enable one to transmit not just signals but voice. Which involves a continuous signal, a different technology. I'm going to skip through the technologies. In the readings, they're covered very well, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on them. But he makes the Fessenden, Reginald Fessenden, an American engineer, makes the first audio broadcast transmitting an opera, Handelaria, Ombra Mai Fuk, There Was Never Such a Shadow, which evidently was heard several hundred miles away. Marconi is awarded the Nobel Prize, and so on. The technology is emerging. How is it first being used? Well, as I say, it's first thought of as a point-to-point technology. In particular, for communication between ships or ship to shore. Not all navies like it. Paul, again, this recall some of the examples Paul gave of Nelson turning his patch on the wrong eye. They kind of turned off their radio sets because they didn't want instructions coming from on high to tell the commanders telling them, captains telling them how to maneuver their ships. Nonetheless, certain navies adopt it. The Japanese, for example, in 1905, use radio and that enables them to maneuver their fleet in such a way as to win a victory over the Russian fleet. The Titanic of which you have all heard, in 1912, has a radio operator. Marconi has been has a business in which he furnishes radio sets, operators, and so on to ships, and they have one. there is a nearby ship that has a radio operator, but he's sleeping at the time. It wasn't required that they be on call at all hours. Congress, in the wake of the Titanic disaster, passes a radio act that does, among other things, requires ships of a certain size to have radio operators and radio rooms. That's the radio, the Marconi room, as it was called, of the Titanic on the right there. And the British, by the time of World War I, have a dominant lead in wireless and cable technology that helps their fleet maintain a blockade of Germany. They're also, they cut the Germans' cable.